All right, cell phone number is toll-free. This number is good in the United States and in Canada. If you're on hold, stay there. If not, I've got a phone line open, 1-800-636-8686. More telephone calls coming up in a short while, but as promised, we are joined by a two-time Olympic medalist in Greco-Roman wrestling, an Olympic gold medalist in 2000, an Olympic bronze medalist in 2004, a world champion in 2001, a distinguished member of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, the subject of the documentary Rulon, which is streaming on OlympicChannel.com. And also, he has lived an amazing life. We are joined by Rulon Gardner. Rulon, it's so good to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's good to be on, Jim. Look forward to, you know, I've looked up to you for many years, so it's a pleasure to be on your show.
My friend, it's so good to hear your voice, and I've been looking forward to having this conversation with you for many, many years as well, because your story really is the stuff of legends. I mean, the stuff of movies. It would make sense then that you would be the subject of a documentary. Listen, I got to say, a lot of people listening right now, I think, are familiar with some of your backstory, but there's so many parts of it that are worth starting back or worth sharing. If we go back to the very beginning, you were the youngest of nine kids, and you grew up on a dairy farm in Wyoming. What was life like for you growing up?
Well, you could kind of say that life was about kind of survival at that point. Being the youngest of nine, I had a brother who his name was Reynolds, and he beat me up you know, on the farm, but then also on the wrestling mat all the way until the end of my senior year. So I was kind of number two to my own family. And then, you know, growing up, I was also diagnosed with a learning disability. So I was told as a young kid I would probably never graduate from high school and, you know, go do anything more than just being a farmer. And for me, you know, those were things that kind of motivated me. And I had a very strong mother who went back to nursing school when she was 50 years old. And she was kind of the inspiration to, you know, give me the ability that I believe that I could do anything if I put my mind to it.
Wow, there's so much stuff in that. Such a great answer right there in and of itself. Rulon Gardner joining us. So, like the farm itself, I'm curious, what kind of work did you do on that farm? What was that like?
Well, if you look at the summer months, you know, people think, oh, you athletes are, you know, you guys are year-round wrestlers. And for me, growing up, we wrestled 4 days a year. And the rest of the year was working on the farm. So our summers would start at about 6:30 in the morning, and we would typically end about midnight, you know, changing pipe, hauling hay, spraying weeds. We did everything we could to survive. Where I grew up is about an hour south of Jackson Hole, Yellowstone area. So it's very beautiful, but it's very cold in the winter. So, you know, we've been 50 below plus, you know, in the winter months growing up. So for us, it was just kind of a daily battle to survive. And then, you know, when got to high school, I would get done with, you know, wrestling or football practice, and you come home and you do all the chores. And a lot of times you don't get in the house until, you know, 9 to 9:30 at night. And then you try to go do homework and get dinner and then go to bed and start it again the next day.
Wow. Rulon Gardner joining us. You know, we had a house in Big Sky, Montana for about a decade. I know those winters. It is brutal. It is so cold and it is brutal. Now, the story goes, you began wrestling at age six. How did you first get into it, and what did you like about it when you started?
Well, what I liked about wrestling was it got me off the farm. That was probably the first and most important thing, is it got me off the farm. But the problem was, is, you know, me and my brother were kind of bigger kids. You know, we weren't huge, but we're bigger kids, and the only people that we had each other, and we would just beat the tar out of each other. So for me, I didn't beat him until I was the end of my junior year in high school. So all those years, you know, he used to kind of tease me, and my coaches are like, Rulon, you know, you were so much better than your brother. Why can't you beat him? I'm like, I don't know. And, you know, he just had that mental thing being older and, you know, being kind of a little bit more physical than I was. And so it just, you know, taught me from a young age, just keep, you know, getting up and, you know, trying to learn. And I think a lot of it was, you know, my learning disability was cognitive understanding. And a lot of my coach, I remember as a young kid, they would get frustrated and they kind of, sometimes they'd walk away and say, you'll never get it. And it just made me want it that much more, because people didn't think I'd ever get it. And finally, you know, when I got the chance to get good and to go to college and then, you know, drive myself to be better and get better at wrestling, I really, you know, pushed the effort into developing my mind. And I think, you know, making the Olympic team at 29 years old, I was a late, you know, bloomer. But then, you know, I learned when most people were happy and content, oh, I won an NCAA title. I'm like, well, yeah, I'm sure I got more. I'm sure I got better things to do, and, you know, I haven't even seen my potential. And, you know, everybody thinking that, high school and college is the pinnacle of wrestling. I'm like, then you go out and meet these Russians, and it's like, these dudes are pretty dang good. So I got a lot to learn, and it, you know, it didn't happen until I was, you know, basically 30 years old.
Roland Gardner joining us. He's the subject of a brand-new documentary of that name. It's streaming right now on theolympicchannel.com. You know, when you mention the learning disability that you have, inevitably you end up going to college and you go to Nebraska. In fact, let me ask you about that. What was it about Lincoln? Because you were being recruited. You had won a junior college championship at Ricks College. So a lot of schools were coming for you for wrestling. What was it about Lincoln that made you feel like that was the right spot?
Well, I had the opportunity to go to Oklahoma State. I had the opportunity to go to BYU. You know, my whole family, and I was kind of the black sheep of the family at this point, because my whole family graduated from the University of Wyoming. So Wyoming wasn't the higher level. And when I got to Wyoming, you know, they pretty well said, hey, we'll help you get the degree. And I got to Nebraska, and they said, you know, you don't have what it takes. And so, you know, hearing that, you know, kind of motivated me. And then we had a really good recruiting class. We ended up beating Iowa and Dan Gable back in the day. And so when I finally got the chance to, you know, make that trip to Nebraska, I ended up just being really impressed with, you know, the staff, the facility, Tim Newman, Mark Cody. You know, they had such a great coaching staff. And, you know, we put a great team together, especially my senior year. We beat Iowa. You know, we fell short at Nationals and took third my senior year. But, you know, we just had such, I think, a class of organization. Plus, you know, the university was pretty amazing. It wasn't easy. You know, they told me day one, I got to Nebraska, you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, you're a junior college graduate, you'll never make it through our program because you're going into phys ed, the fourth hardest degree at the university. You just don't have what it takes. And, you know, that just pissed me off and made me want it that much more.
My man, so how much pride is there in the fact that you did get that diploma? You did what they said you couldn't do. How much pride do you have in having that diploma?
Well, the way I kind of looked at it was, is, you know, they told me, you know, when I got there, like, you'll never make it. And then what I didn't realize was, is when I had transferred there, out of 64 credits, they only accepted 16 of them. And so for me, you know, not having the respect of, you know, the university to say, you know what, we'll back you no matter what, I really wanted to push myself. And so for me, it was just, you know, stay focused. You know, you're not probably going to, you know, be the best wrestler. You're not going to be the smartest wrestler, but you're going to give your best every day. And that's all I could offer, is, you know, showing up and doing my best.
Roland Gardner joining us. He's got a brand new documentary out as well that's streaming right now. So your best NCAA finish at Nebraska was fourth. And then in 1995, you won the USA Wrestling Greco-Roman National Championship. Then you won the World Cup the next year. But let me fast forward to the Sydney Games in 2000. What kind of plans and expectations did you have for yourself going to Sydney?
Well, that's where it kind of gets kind of crazy, because you look at it, and I had to beat Matt Kafari, who was the Olympic silver medalist from the 96 Olympics. And he was there. He was, you know, kind of like my brother. You know, he would antagonize me, you know, Ruland, you'll never beat me, kind of trash talking. And it kind of made me mad. And so, you know, going into the Olympics, I had never beat Matt Kafari until I finally got to the trials. And then I finally beat him. I made the Olympic team. I'm like, yeah, things are looking up. I'm, you know, you're going to come out and you're going to show the world how good you are. And I went to a tournament a month before the Olympics in Russia. And in the tournament, I'm like, okay, you know, Ruland, you finally come out. You're on your own. You're going to show. And the big Russian Karelin didn't want to, you know, show any of his technique. So he set out and didn't actually wrestle that tournament. And so I went out there and I got to the finals of the tournament. And I thought, you know what, you're going to show them. And I went to the finals, and I went right after. His name was Yuri Patrikiev. And I went right after him. In 13 seconds, he threw me and pinned me. And I hadn't been pinned since I was in junior high. So it was pretty humiliating and humbling. But it was probably the best thing to ever happen to me, because it got my head right. And it made me realize, you know what, you're good, but you're not that good.
Roland Gardner joining us. So you mentioned Karelin. As many people remember, you had to face Karelin in the gold medal match. At that time, he was a three-time defending gold medalist. He had not lost in 13 years. He had not dropped a point in 6 years. What was your mindset going into that match?
Well, going into it, and Coach Steve Frazier was my national team coach and Olympic champion from the 84 Olympics. And, you know, Steve was like, okay, you know, Ruland, we don't really know how to beat him. The only time I had wrestled him before, in 1997, he had thrown me on my head, and he had a move called the reverse lift, and he actually broke two vertebrae in my neck in that match. And so as I came off the mat, I realized this guy's pretty good. And so Sydney, you know, he used the intimidation. He'd shake your hand, and, you know, your hand would disappear in his, and he was 6'5", 6'6". He was just this, you know, they called him the experiment. And so going into it, my coach is like, Ruan, he expects to win. They already announced his retirement party. He's overlooking you. So what you got to do is come out, because he had watched me barely win my semifinals. I was losing 2-0, and I beat a former Russian who had moved to Israel, and I beat him, and I came back from being down 2-0 to beat him 3-2. And so I'm going into the finals, and everybody said, oh, it's going to be an easy finals for Carell. And well, you know, the thing is when you compete, you always look to the best in the world, and that's the person you go after. And so in my head, I had envisioned myself wrestling him for many years. And so I think I kind of developed a, I don't know if it's something special, but a way to compete with him that most people didn't. And, you know, that's the thing about growing up the way I did, is most people are saying, you know, Ruan, you can't do it. And that was just the perfect opportunity. All I've ever asked for in my life is an opportunity. You know, some people look at it as an obstacle. I just look at it as an opportunity to prove them wrong and to go out and accomplish something.
There's obviously so much in this to see adversity for what it is, an opportunity. Ruan Gardner joining us. I think it's amazing, too, the coaches said, hey, listen, by the way, we don't know how to beat this guy. We literally don't know how to beat this guy. But you have been building up for this moment your entire lifetime. You end up winning. It's regarded as one of the greatest upsets in the history of all of sports. What kind of emotions were you feeling after that match was over and you had won that gold medal?
Well, the funny part is everybody, my family, after all said and done, my family is like, Ruan, we knew you were going to succeed. We knew that you were going to beat Carell. And I'm like, are you guys crazy? They're like, yeah. And I'm like, you know, it wasn't confidence. It was, you know, kind of cluelessness, I guess you could say, because I didn't think I had a shot at beating them. But you know what? You always put yourself in the game. If you at least put yourself out, you always have a chance. And so, you know, after I'd won the match, it came back and everybody's like, you know, did you expect to beat him? I'm like, no. I'm like, I was just out there to compete and, you know, give my best effort. You know, I had no expectation going in, because once I made the Olympic team, all the people around, you know, wrestling had said, oh, well, there goes any chance of us winning a medal. You're ruined. You've never won a medal at the, you know, the world competition level. So, you know, why would you do anything different? Well, like you said, I had been kind of preparing for that moment my whole life. And the coaches and the belief that they gave me just made me believe in myself. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to leave Australia without one stone unturned. I'm going to give 100%. And that's what I did.
Well, and the amazing thing is, like, normally at this point, I would say, man, that what an amazing story. Congratulations to you and congratulations to your life. And where can our listeners find this documentary? But this is not the end of this story. Nowhere near it. Nowhere near it. I mean, you win a world championship the following year. And then in 2002, you're snowmobiling with some friends in Wyoming. At one point, you become separated from the group. You fall into a freezing river with your snowmobile. What happened? What do you remember about that moment?
Well, as I was pulling my snowmobile, because I was trying to get back to where my friends were, but the problem was the snow was about 6 feet deep, and so I dropped down in, and I thought, oh, I could just follow the ravine back to my hometown and meet up with my friends, and we'll be fine. It was Valentine's Day, and so, you know, we just went for a quick ride, and I was actually in the river, and I pull my snowmobile back, and I fall in the river, and I fall backwards, and I turn over. So now everything I have is wet. And being that we were only going for a short ride, I didn't wear all my correct gear. I didn't have my real thick, you know, my winter parka. I didn't have all that. I just had a T-shirt, sweatshirt, and a fleece top. It was, you know, meant because when I go riding, I'm pulling my snowmobile, I'm sweating, and, you know, it was going to be an easy ride. So I didn't prepare. So at that point, I realized, Ruan, you're truly in trouble. Leave your snowmobile in the river. You know, go find a place. You know, try to make a little fort or something to, you know, give yourself some, you know, I guess, protection from the wind and the cold that was coming. And it was just getting dark, and about 4:30 I got wet, and then I left my snowmobile in the river about 7 o'clock, and I actually found some trees, and I stood up and I sat down, and I didn't, the problem about being out there is yourself, you know, your cell signal won't work. People know you're lost, but they don't know where you're at. And so by the time they get a search party put together, it takes hours and hours. And I was waiting from about 7:30 at night underneath the tree until about 2:30 in the morning, where I could hear him within 200 yards. But the problem was, is nobody dared follow me because I dropped my snowmobile into the river. I'm going down the river, and these people are like, this guy's crazy. You know, he's doing things that most people wouldn't. Why is he going in the river? I'm like, well, it's the only thing I could do to try to save myself, until finally I just had to leave my snowmobile and just wait to be rescued. And, you know, from 2:30 to about 4:30 in the morning. At 4:30, I saw the, you know, the Almighty. I saw Jesus and God. And I lost a brother when I was 8 years old. We lost him to aplastic anemia. And I was sitting, you know, there in this vision, and they came to me and they asked me to come home and die. And I said, no, not yet. I'm like, I'm just getting good at wrestling. I'm just figuring things out. I'm like, I want to come back and win the Olympics again. And I remember waking up out of that vision and realizing that you're freezing to death, but you know, you're still alive, but you know, you're going to have to focus. And finally, about 7 o'clock in the morning, they had spotted me, but because the Olympics were going in Utah, they couldn't get to where I was at. And so for 3 hours, I had an airplane circle me because they couldn't fly any helicopters out of Utah and Salt Lake to come pick me up. And finally, about 3 hours later, they picked me up, and my core temperature was measured at 80 degrees at about 10 o'clock in the morning. So I'd been up there for over 15 hours or over 18 hours, and the temperature was between 25 and 30 below zero.
Roland Gardner joining us. Absolutely insanity. 18 hours, you have hypothermia, you have frostbite. They had to use a saw to take off your boots. There was concern that you were going to lose your feet. As it turns out, you had a toe amputated. Legend has it you kept that toe in the fridge as a reminder. Is that true?
Yes, it was. You probably asked him, why did I do it?
Why did you do that?
Probably the best reason is, you know, in failure, you need reminders to remind you why you failed. And so for me, it was, you know, this is what happens if you make bad decisions and stupid, you know, mistakes in life. You know, you're going to have to pay the price. And so same reason, you know, I went to the hospital. The doctor's like, oh, do you want painkiller? I'm like, no. Like, you don't want painkiller? I'm like, no, my body's teaching me a lesson that I did something very foolish, and so I need to learn from that lesson. So I just, you know, I just believe our bodies are, you know, something that we work through. And for me, you know, I got to the hospital. My, you know, my sister's a cardiologist, and the doctor's like, dude, your feet are frozen. You're gonna, you know, we're gonna cut them off within a week. And my sister, she's like, no, I've been talking to these, you know, these doctors up in Seattle and, you know, up in Alaska, and they're saying this is how we're gonna keep your feet with the frostbite. And they just simply thought it was just too, you know, too far gone, that my feet were dead, because when I got to, you know, the hospital, there was no blood flow. They were frozen solid. They had to thaw them out. You know, my tissue started to bleed off of my foot. And finally I end up losing, you know, the one toe. And, you know, the doctor simply said, it's a miracle. You only lost that. And he said, but because of the skin grafts, you may lose all the feeling in your feet. And that's what happened. And I came back and started to think I could wrestle again. And, you know, I was tripping and falling because I had lost all the sensitivity in my toes. And so balance being a wrestler is such a huge part of it, and ended up coming back and training. And Jermil Byers, my training partner in Colorado Springs, he won the worlds. And so everybody, their first practice is like, dude, he's a world champ. You can't even walk. You can't even stand up. You'll never beat him. And ultimately, 8 months, I beat him, you know, to make the world team in 2003. And then it's the same you know, thing that happened in the 2004 Olympics. I beat Jermil, and instead of being mad, he called me up and said, I'll help you any way to, you know, make the Olympic team and now win another medal.
Roland, this is amazing in the sense that I can't even cover all this. You and I have already spent more time on this show, and I'm really grateful for every moment. This is an amazing conversation. But you and I have spent more time than any standard interview that I have on this show, and we haven't even covered. I mean, never mind that you probably could have and should have died as a result of that. You were also involved in a lightweight aircraft that crashed into Lake Powell. You were involved in a motorcycle accident. My question is, how do you explain that time and time again, you have been in some of the most difficult circumstances imaginable, things that would kill almost anybody else, and you keep emerging and coming out alive? How do you explain this?
Well, I'd like to say that I'm just tough, but I think I'm just too stupid to die. That's probably what it comes down to. You know, I think, you know, honestly, growing up on the farm in Wyoming, you know, I ended up, you know, every day was a near-death experience. You know, we would have scrapes and scratches, and, you know, we just get all these little injuries that happened. And my family never talked about safety. You know, my dad never said, hey, you know, there's a chance if you get on that tractor and you fall off that wheel well, there's a chance you could, you know, die. And so for us, we really, you know, didn't think a lot about safety. And so finally, I started looking at my life and my family kind of making fun of me because they're like, Ruin, you know, you worked so hard your whole life. Now you want to have fun. You got to understand and control how much fun you have. And so, you know, the snowmobile accident, that was my mistake. And I put myself in that position and I deserved to go through what I did. The plane wreck, I was just a passenger in the aircraft of the owner, and he is the one that made the mistake. And I remember hearing that you had talked about me on the show the next few days afterwards, and I was like, man, if I ever get a chance, I want to choke that Jim guy, because you're like, I don't want to be his friend, but if I'm ever stranded, he's the one guy I want to be with. And I heard about that, and it just made me kind of realize, you know, that I need to make better decisions and hopefully better choices.
Man, I'm so glad. You don't still want to choke me, do you?
Well, maybe not. I think you're overall, you know, you do too much good for the sporting world in America.
Good. I'm glad to hear it, man. I'm glad that we can get right. It's, if you stay in this game long enough, things ultimately come around. And like you said, we all make mistakes, and we got to own our mistakes. This is an amazing life, Roland, that you have lived. It's all part of a documentary for those. And again, I couldn't even cover everything. I tried to, but what a great conversation. If listeners want to find the documentary, where do they go to get it?
Well, they go to theolympiccannel.com/Roland Gardner.
So you want to go there. It is streaming right now on olympiccannel.com. He is a distinguished member of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. He is a world champion. He is an Olympic gold medalist. There's a bronze medalist in there as well. A two-time Olympic medalist overall in Greco-Roman wrestling, and the subject of that documentary, Ruin. It is so good to come together with you. Great to have you on the show. Thank you very much for doing that. And the documentary really is a tremendous watch. Thanks for doing that.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim. I just think the world of you, and appreciate it. But, you know, as Americans, I think the Olympics, you know, for me has a special place in my heart, because I've been to 44 countries through, you know, the Olympics and through wrestling. And, you know, wrestling is one of those sports that brings our world together. They tried to cut the Olympics a few years ago from the Olympics. And, you know, we had Iranians, the Russians, everybody. You know, I've been to Cuba 8 times. The Cubans got some of the best wrestlers in the world. There's just so many great athletes in wrestling, and the Olympics brings us all together through sports. It's just been a pleasure to be able to represent myself and then ultimately America. You know, like I said in the documentary, the three most important letters in the world, you know, USA, means the world to me.
I think that's great, and I'm so glad you and I can come together. I think the world to you as well, Roland. Great to have you on. Thank you so much. Once again, the documentary, Roland, is now streaming on olympiccannel.com. Normally, and I did break the clock to do that, but it was well worth it. What an amazing story that is. And again, I could not tell the entire story. So my thanks to Roland Gardner. And I'm so glad the big man did not choke me out. We could have never had that conversation.